Okay. Welcome back, everyone. Quick announcement. Today, I have office hours slated 1:30 to 2:30. I'm going to have to push those back by half an hour due to a meeting I have to attend. So office hours, and we move back by half an hour to 2 to 3 o'clock today if you're planning on attending. Problems with that? I can add additional later in the day. If anybody can't make these but was planning to come see me, talk to me after class or shoot me an email, we'll find another time. So continuing on, we've been talking about this dual active bridge converter, and we went through last time and analyzed in each sub interval what is the equivalent circuit, and from that sketched the state plane. We found that for this converter in this mode of operation, there are two separate resonant transitions, one to obtain ZVS on the primary, one to obtain ZVS on the secondary. Because those in general have different resonant element values, different voltages across which they swing, we sketch two different state planes with two different normalizations. But because the resonant transitions themselves are separated in time, that we have an interval with the primary resonance, then some phase shift interval, then the interval with the secondary resonance. These two are never occurring at the same time. So when we look at the two state planes, we have these kind of disparate resonant transitions that we can then analyze the primary on the primary state plane, secondary on the secondary state plane, combine everything together to get our complete model of operation. This, just as a refresher, I had an animation lying around for a presentation I had done in the past introducing state plane. So these yellow circles are going to animate and show how the time domain waveforms translate over into the state plane. So beginning here in interval 4, we have our power delivery interval, which we have nothing happening on the state plane because our voltages and currents are constant. And this interval is really where we get the bulk of our output power, right? Looking down here at the output current constant at its maximum value during this entire interval, this is where most of our charge is going to be delivered to the output. We get a little bit more during the next interval where we have our primary side resonant transition. We sweep through this arc on the primary side state plane. The secondary sees some small drop in current, but with a locked voltage. We go through our phase shift interval, which is really our main power control interval, where the duration of this time is determining how far the inductor current ramps. That interval is longer, will ramp to a higher value. Shorter, will ramp to a lower value. So for a shorter interval, this whole thing would be compressed, and we'd end up with a smaller amount of output power. So that we go through the secondary resonant interval. You see this section of an arc sweeped out on the secondary state plane, and then all of that just repeats over the second half of the period. Anti-symmetric on all our AC waveforms, and fully symmetric on anything outside of the bridges on our DC side input and output. So we ended last class here, where I had hurriedly finished my derivation of what our normalized output current is, parameter J, which was normalized output current, and I reflected it through over to the primary, multiplying by N. That just made my notation a little bit simpler. I didn't have to worry about my normalization on the secondary versus the primary and carry these N's through with everything. It allowed me to just look at the charges, looking at the inductor current. So from this equation, the next slide, I'll analyze this a little bit. The one change I'll make to how I express this equation is I'm going to plug in for beta and for zeta from what we derived here. Beta is J1 plus J2 over 2. And this zeta, I can say it's pi over f minus alpha minus beta minus delta. So beta is J1 plus J2 over 2. Zeta is pi over f minus alpha minus beta minus delta. This one I'll just plug in here for beta. Let me get J2 minus J1 times J1 plus J2. I'll get just the squared terms left over, J1 squared plus J2 squared over 4. And that's the expression I have now on this page. And what I've done here is plotted in normalized form what I call the output plane for this dual active bridge converter. And that is J, what we just solved for, this normalized output current, versus J peak, my normalized peak current on the primary. And there's a lot of information now in this plot, and we'll talk through some of this. These sorts of plots are general because everything is normalized. It's abstracted from the specific converter implementation, which is a nice thing. I can look at this without having to say what my voltages are and what my devices are. The flip side is because everything is normalized, it can take an extra minute to look at it and say, okay, what is this really telling me? Because based on the normalization, how any normalized current corresponds to a real current is different depending on what L and C, V base and I base are. So what I'm plotting here is a range of curves, all of these blue ones, that are my J versus J peak, the solution to this equation. Here, this red line is my J peak is equal to 2. Color coordinate here. Which was my ZVS condition for the primary side. So any operation to the left of this, I'm going to be hard switching my primary side devices. Any operation to the right, I should be able to soft switch my primary side devices. Okay. This green dashed line is my F goes to 0. Okay. As a reminder, this normalized capital F is FS over F naught. So as F goes to 0, what that means is that F naught much greater than FS. So my F naught from primary is 1 over 2 pi root LLCP. So it's the resonant frequency of my leakage inductor and my primary side device capacitance. So if I'm saying that F naught is much less than FF, what I'm saying is that this resonant ZVS transition is going to happen during a very small percentage of the period. The time, my dead time on the primary side is negligible with respect to the rest of the period. Okay. It means is that my switching happens very fast and has little input on my converter operation. And this is pushing me towards the ideal case that we talked about when we introduced the DAB, where I have no time spent in any interval other than this power delivery interval, and my current stresses approach the minimum possible current stresses. So this line really is my ideal with J peak is equal to J. Okay. And that's possible when these intervals here are very small. Okay. So my resonant interval is very small by nature of F naught being some very high frequency relative to FS. And then my phase shift interval can be very small if my resonant interval is short. And we'll talk about that more in a second. Essentially, All three of those are very short, so it's going to look like I spend my entire period here. And I have essentially peak current stresses, RMS current stresses, all equal to my average, and minimum stresses in my converter. So that's a good thing. That's something we would like to approach. This would be switching transitions. Occupy negligible portion of TS. Okay. On the other end of the spectrum down here, I have F is equal to 1, which means that my F naught approaches FS. This is the opposite end of the spectrum. Now I'm going to spend my entire period in these resonant transitions. Now, there is current delivered through to the output during this primary side resonant transition, but if I allowed that to occupy a quarter of the period, I'd have some waveform that really looked like a quarter sinusoid here, and I'm going to have peak current stresses well in excess of my average current. I'm going to have higher stresses for the same output power, same operating condition. In this converter, this dual active bridge, it's meant to be resonant only insofar as is necessary to obtain zero voltage switching. After this, we'll look at converters that are meant to be resonant converters, that are meant to be full sinusoidal waveforms in the tank. And one of the drawbacks of them is that they can't approach this near minimum current stresses. I've got a sinusoidal current, and I rectify that in some way. I've got at least a multiple of pi over 4 for peak stresses to average stresses. Okay. This is approaching fully resonant waveforms. Okay, so from that alone, for a given implementation, it seems reasonable that I'd want to push towards F goes to zero. And I can do that in a couple ways. I can adjust CP, but that obviously has implications on which devices I select. So that may be a parameter for optimization, but not something I'm really free to adjust. And switching frequency and tank inductance are two things I can set however I like for my design. To get F to go to zero, what it would want me to do is make my switching frequency very small. Okay. That's an option. That's going to lead to very large transformer. If my switching frequency is small, it's going to need to be a big physical element to avoid saturation. It's going to have a lot of volt second supply to it over a longer period. My other option is to make L very, see, I want F not large, so I want to make L very small. And the impact of that may not be immediately apparent due to the normalization, but when we looked back at my ZVS condition, J peak is equal to 2. If you recall, when I denormalize this, this looks like 1/2 Li squared greater than 1/2 CP VG squared. So to get J peak is equal to 2 to correspond to a low power, I need a very large inductance. So my ZVS is pushing me towards a large inductance, and my conduction losses are pushing me towards a small inductance. And I'm going to have to make a decision somewhere in the middle about what I'm willing to live with for each of those. The other thing you might notice here is that for each of these curves, for some of the small f's, it's off to the right of the plot, but for each of them, there is a maximum j, which they get to. it's more apparent in these lower curves that there is some maximum value that my normalized output current is going to get to, and it follows a trajectory maybe somewhat like that. And I can continue going up in J-peak, but in doing so, I am reducing my average output current. Okay. To make that a little bit more apparent, I'm plotting some time domain waveforms in the next few slides. I'm going to follow this trajectory here with F is just a little bit greater than 0.4. Pick that because it's a design that we had built in the past. Before I do that, somewhat of a side note, but I wanted to just cover denormalizing these state plane waveforms. I think you have everything you need to do this, but we haven't covered it explicitly in the class yet. So in denormalizing, you guys know how to do that. I take my J's and I multiply by I base. But going from a plot to time domain waveforms, how does that show up? So if I have a portion of a resonant interval, I'm going to just generally have my M versus J axes. I'm going to say that I have some resonance centered at JDC and MDC with an initial point here, call it M0, J0. I have my circle that I resonate around. And this is some zero voltage switching transition. I may only resonate over part of that circle. So my state plane, the resonance would look like this full circle, but the only portion of it that I'm saying is actually part of my converter operation is this small segment. And we'll just call this angle alpha. So in my state plane, I can write equations for the progression of M and J as a function of theta. Right? So as I'm resonating around this circle, what I have is that M of theta is equal to my MDC plus, for M, I am on the horizontal axis. That's going to be my cosine term, R cosine of theta. This is now my equation for my M component starting at this point. If I want to start at the beginning of this resonance, what I need to look at is what is my initial condition on the angle. Call this theta naught. Then that'd be cosine theta plus theta naught. Then my equation would be valid for 0 less than theta is less than alpha. Okay. So it's going to be theta spanning the range of this resonance from 0 to alpha. My normalized current, J of theta, is going to be just JDC plus R sine theta plus theta naught. And those equations over this range of theta, which is valid for the section of this resonance that I am calling what actually occurs in my converter, describes the progression of the states in state plane notation. So if I denormalize, I am going to just multiply my J's by I base, multiply my M's by V base, and that's going to take me over into the time domain. And I'm going to end up with equations which are valid from T goes between 0 and alpha over omega naught. the time that it takes for me to span out alpha radians on the state plane. Okay. And that's going to give me back my time domain equation. E of t is equal to, if I just multiply it through by v base, what we get is mdc times v base. That'll give me some vdc plus v base times r cosine, and call this theta, but in our time domain, theta is omega naught t plus theta naught. Okay. And the same thing for my current. And here, an important thing is t is the time within this interval. To demonstrate why that's something important to keep track of, I'm going to call it t star, because I need to differentiate from my real time. For example, in this dual active bridge converter, if I had my inductor current that looks something like this, and I was trying to model the behavior during this secondary side switching transition, this is my T axis. I would, for this subinterval, plot my state plane, denormalize it. And in this equation, this T star is an axis here, starting from zero and going through to, in this case, delta over omega naught for subinterval three. The important thing is if I plug in my actual time here, then I'm going to have all of this time where my resonant equation would have thought I'm spinning around the circle. But in fact, I've already put my initial conditions in there, and I'm saying t is equal to zero is the beginning of this resonance. Okay. So just something to keep track of if you're doing this programmatically. One way to handle that so that I can plug in my real time would be to say I of t is equal to IDC plus I base R sine of omega naught times T minus TX. TX is my general notation. This would be my TX. And then I can use my actual time here. Okay. We're just subtracting off the time at the beginning of the subinterval. Okay. Something I wanted to cover. Now I've used that, back to what we were talking about, and I've taken my state plane solution to the dual active bridge converter, and I'm plotting points along this trajectory. So looking first right at the 0-volt switching boundary, another thing I did to simplify, in this case, I made CS is equal to CP times N squared. How I defined N, that should be over N squared, and is less than 1 in this case. Just trying to make my normalizations the same so I don't have to worry about whether I'm normalizing with respect to I base or I base prime. So essentially my primary and secondary resonant transitions are well matched. So this first point that I'm plotting is right at the 0-volt switching boundary. I'm at the ZBS bound. And my red vertical lines indicate where the end of one subinterval occurs. And probably can't see this until the next slide, but this is subinterval one, and this is subinterval three. And then repeats for the next period. So subinterval two has gone to zero. Because my primary and secondary ZVS transitions are matched, during subinterval one, when I'm at J peak is equal to two, I'm at the ZVS bound, what that means is that my resonance is going to carry me from minus VG up to plus VG, but it's going to take all of the inductor current energy, and this resonant transition is going to end with zero current in the inductor. So if I tried to reduce this any, my inductor current would reach zero before I complete this ZVS transition and I'd hard switch. I'm at the boundary here. So IL crosses zero exactly as I reach soft switching. Right? And then because of my normalization, I get the same thing on the secondary side. And this occurs at some average output current here, little bit below N times I out, approximately 0.9, a little bit below 1 amp. The value of that has to do with the numbers that I selected for voltages and passive elements. I only want to draw it out so I can compare it to the next few slides. Okay. So the next slide, I'm going to move over here to a higher J peak. So now I'm somewhere close to J peak is equal to three. I'm well above the ZVS boundary. You see is that my resonant transitions are now no longer coming in as a full quarter resonance, coming in with zero dV/dt. I now have excess current in the inductor beyond what I needed to obtain ZVS. So I end with a current in the inductor of minus 1.5 amps. My output current has increased, but my peak current has also increased, and adding in this subinterval two has caused kind of my non-power delivery intervals to take up a longer period of time. And now there is a somewhat significant difference between my peak current and my average. Here I was a little closer. Okay. So my waveforms are starting to look less like, particularly my current, look less like this ideal square wave, more trapezoidal at the moment. Okay. If I continue on, this is somewhere out here, 3.5. The same trends continue. My subinterval two has gotten a little bit longer. I'm spending more time ramping to reach that higher peak current. And my output current, N times I out, about maybe 1.7. It's gone up a little bit. And this is actually the peak for this trajectory. If I continue on, my trajectory is going to start decreasing. I'll show that. I'll go up here to somewhere, this is 4.5. What's happening now is my output power is actually decreasing. My peak current has gone up, but I'm back to a lower output current. So with this, I've got in my solution, I'm going to have multiple different operating points that'll give me the same output power. One where I have near square wave currents in the inductor, low current stresses. One where I have almost triangular currents in the inductor, very high current stresses relative to my average value. So seems like this would be a bad place to operate, right? I'm getting same amount of output power, but with higher RMS currents, higher conduction losses everywhere. the one potentially redeeming quality of this trajectory is that for this output power, I have higher peak current. This could lead to improved behavior of my ZVS transitions. Can at a lower power get a higher peak current, which is what's necessary to obtain ZVS. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. My last one, I'm going to go all the way out. I'm somewhere way out here at J peak is equal to 6. My output current has decreased even further. So this is about 0.5. And my inductor current is almost a full triangle wave with a very large difference between the peak stresses. I'm now having almost 5 amps of current in my inductor to deliver half an amp to the output versus before where I had 0.6 amps to deliver half an amp to the output. A lot of the operation of this DAB converter is really controlled by the selection of the inductance. Assuming you are somewhat constrained on your switching frequency according to converter size and your device parasitic capacitances, you're trying to optimize losses. You have to select the right devices. What you're left with as a parameter for your design is this inductance. And looked at this kind of a plot before. I want to draw it again here. So my basic range is that as P out increases, there's some point here, according to my normalization, where my output power above this, I'll get ZVS. Below this, I'll be hard switching. And this point, my P min for ZVS, is something I can design by selecting this inductance. Okay. This Pmin ZVS comes from when J peak is equal to 2, and if I denormalize here, my J peak is I peak over I base, which is I peak over VG times R naught. Here is my constraint. So VG is specified by the application, my input voltage, CP. I'll assume I'm wanting to pick the best device and that has a set CP. So then I've got a relationship here between I peak and LL. If I make LL large, then I can satisfy this at a smaller peak current. If I make LL small, then I'm going to need a larger peak current to get this whole inequality to be satisfied. So what that means is I can shift this point where my converter loses ZVS. I can shift it out this direction with a small LL. I can shift it back here with a large LL, and my penalty is going to be really in my conduction losses. The larger LL is, the longer my phase shift interval needs to be to ramp from minus I peak up to plus I peak, the longer my resonant intervals are going to be because I'm increasing LL, and my resonant period is proportional to that. So my trade-offs here, ZVS, I want a large LL, so ZVS is maintained. Over a wide range of power. Or J peak less than 2 occurs at low power, denormalized. And then my conduction loss, what I really want is a small LL. You can motivate. From our normalized plot, we said we wanted a small f, which would make our resonant transitions occupy a small portion of the period. F is fs over f naught, which is 2 pi root LLCP. I'd like LL to be very small, but this approaches zero. Okay. And that will minimize my current stresses in the converter. In general, how you decide this design is difficult to do independent of an application. Okay. So it may be that you're in an application where you need a 100 watt converter. You know that 90% of the time it's going to operate between 50 and 100 watts. Then I would solve for LL such that I maintain ZVS down to 50 watts. And then 90% of the time I should be fully zero voltage switching and have low current stresses. The last 10% of the time I might start hard switching. If I have a design where I can either turn off or turn on my converter and only ever operate at full power, I'd push this minimum for ZVS all the way out to full power, and you'd have the most efficient single operating point design, because I'd have the minimum stresses that I could get to get ZVS up at full power. Okay. But in general, this is now a knob you turn in the design of this. Okay. For a different LL, I'll move this ZVS boundary up and down, and at what point am I happy with the sum of conduction losses and switching losses? Okay. Does that make sense? All right.
Can you play with switching frequency for a
LL? Yeah. I don't know why you might instead approach it as design switching frequency, then design LL within that. Once you allow yourself to vary switching frequency, why limit yourself to a fixed LL? So you can, for example, extend your switching frequency at low power so that you can maintain ZVS. It would allow you to have lower current stresses and design with something that can maintain ZVS. The problem with that is when you look at the design, the size of the transformer is really dictated by how much voltage you apply to it and for how long. So you would be speccing your transformer based on the minimum switching frequency, which would occur at low power, which means you'd have to have a bigger transformer. And even though at high power you're going to higher switching frequency, you're still designing, you're not getting the advantage of that high switching frequency. So the question becomes, why not just always operate at that low switching frequency? You're allowing yourself to go down there, you should always be there. You've got a big enough transformer to handle it. Okay. Get through to it. I'll talk about a couple of methods to play with this trade-off. So we've got a couple plots here that I'm just going to go over at a high level, showing this trade-off in a few different ways just to make sure it's clear. So on the left here, I'm plotting the normalized output current versus time. Normalized, I just divided by the average. This is not my state plane normalization, just so that my average current at the output is 1. And I'm looking at, as I vary inductance, basically increase LL, what happens to my waveforms. So to deliver that same average as my inductance goes up, higher peak, higher RMS. Those quantities are just plotted here for a full range of inductance. So my average current stays the same. My RMS and peak current at the output increase significantly as I go to larger inductance. Okay, so all conduction losses are going to increase. Just on time, I'm going to hop over this. So that plot, what I had before, everything except this red line, models the conduction loss dependent on this tank inductor. But we can also, based on JP greater than 2, derive what is my ZVS range. So this red line is the minimum current I need for ZVS. It's just solving, back solving JP is equal to 2 based on this variable inductance. And you can see if I want to operate at some output power given by my normalized output current of 1, then I'm going to have to look for where that output current crosses my minimum output current necessary for ZVS. And now I've got everything to the left of here is hard switching. Everything to the right of here has higher conduction losses for the same output power. So if I only care about a single point, I want to design it right here. I want to put this thing exactly at the boundary of 0 voltage switching. But I still have that, still minimize switching losses, but have the minimum current stresses to do so. Okay. Now, if you care about a wide range of operating points, it's a more complex trade-off. But for a single power, I only want this output current of 1. This would be the best design. Okay. Just looking at that same thing, just in a different way. What is the minimum power necessary for ZVS versus the tank inductance for some given values of capacitances and switching frequency? So if I have a 200 watt output power converter and I need it to maintain ZVS down to 100 watts, I need to design with inductance of about 15 microhenries. That, as it so happens, were the specs I was simulating previously when we looked at the plots from the state plane. And then the last thing I want to look at is device selection. So we've got a couple plots here showing. So assuming I take this approach and I set some minimum power for ZVS and pick the inductance to make sure that I maintain ZVS down to that power, then as I look at different device implementations for a different power transistor, the output capacitance will change, the on resistance will change. As this capacitance goes up, it's going to change my normalization, and I'm going to need a higher inductance, this is my LL in black, to maintain ZVS down to the same power. For larger capacitance, I need more inductance to hit that same point. It's also going to do is affect my CIG RMS and IO RMS. Looks like I lost my labels. Apologize for that. So as that LL goes up and CP goes up, I'm going to have more conduction losses at the same operating point. And over here, just showing the same thing with time domain waveforms. As my CP increases, each of these from 20 pico to 70 pico, in order to maintain ZVS, I have to use a larger inductor. It makes my resonant interval longer because of the larger capacitance and larger inductance. And it also makes my beta interval, my phase shift interval, larger because I've got a bigger inductance. And I've got 2 VG over LL, and I need to ramp the same distance. So as this capacitance goes up, my converter is looking more and more like this triangle wave case. The portion of the period occupied by these transitions is getting larger. Does that all make sense? High-level details on this. So techniques for extending ZVS range. So if I look through this and there is basically no design that I'm happy with, either because my converter needs to operate at very low power and there's always some breakpoint where I no longer achieve ZVS, or because over the range of power I'm operating on, the conduction losses are too high. What can I do to alter this trade-off? And there's a few different things. One is I can look at a different topology. There are other topologies other than the dielectric bridge that can maintain ZVS over a wider range of alpha power. We'll get to those later in the course. But still looking at the ZVS, there's some slight modifications I can make to this to give me some advantageous behavior in terms of soft switching. First is change my voltage conversion ratio. So in the waveforms we've been looking at so far, we said V over NVG is equal to 1. And a couple classes ago, I made a quick comment that, well, if this wasn't the case, what would happen is during this power delivery subinterval, instead of having VG and a reflected VG applied across the inductor, I'd have VG and NV applied across the inductor. V over N, how we did N. And those would be not equal. And what that would cause is my current during this interval would either be ramping up or ramping down. Okay. Both of those could be good for one transition, bad for another, right? So during this transition, my primary side switching transition, I want this current to be very large, very positive. So this current would make it easier for me to obtain ZVS, right? This current would make it harder. If I look at the secondary transition, it's going to be the opposite. I want this current to be large and positive. This would help me. This would hurt me. So by altering this conversion ratio, I can selectively distribute losses between the primary and secondary. If I have a 500 volt to 1 volt converter in this dielectric bridge, I probably need to make sure that I have ZVS on the primary, that 500 volts. Secondary is 1 volt, I don't care. It's going to be C times 1 squared losses. I can handle non-ZVS over there. So I might adjust this so that I selectively favor the primary side with zero voltage switching. What this looks like, so far I've plotted this P out goes from zero to P min ZVS, and I had ZVS out here. I could extend this and look at an axis here that is my V over NVG. The case we've looked at is that equal to 1. If it goes higher output voltage, we will be in this case. And basically, my ZVS range is going to look something like this. Where up here, I'll have primary side hard switching. Down here, I'll have secondary hard switching. In this range, I'll have all devices hard switching. So for example, if I really needed my primary devices to always have ZVS, I might design my turns ratio such that I operate down here. It's going to, instead of having full ZVS down to this power, now I'm going to have full ZVS down to this power and then secondary hard switching, but always maintain primary side hard switching. Because I'm adding in this kind of triangular current ramping waveform into my wave shape. You could go through and analyze that exactly the same as we did. The only difference would be the center of my ZVS transition shifts a little bit. Instead of being at 1, that's V over NVG. Okay. The other option that effectively gives me the same thing is to gap my core. I mentioned this previously. If I reduce this magnetizing inductance, what I'll get is some triangular wave shape of current in this transformer. And that current, depending on where I put my LL, if I put it over here, that IM current will reflect through the primary. If I put LL on the primary, it's going to go through the secondary. Either way, what I end up with is some current triangle wave shape that looks like this. If I put it on the primary side, it would be shifted over. If I put it on the secondary, but if I add that in to my LL current, what I'm going to get is basically the same effect. So now at this transition in subinterval 5, I'll have that magnetizing current plus the leakage inductor current available for ZVS. I can design it such that this magnetizing current has a peak large enough to get me ZVS, and then I have ZVS of that side over the full range of output power. The trade-off with that is that magnetizing current is always there. Okay? So I need a low power, it's helping me get ZVS. As I go up to high power, it's just extra conduction losses. Okay? I would have had enough, even without it, to get ZVS. Now I've got that, plus this circulating current that delivers no power, just circulates in the magnetizing inductance, increasing conduction losses. So, okay. Questions on any of that? None? Okay. Okay. You're welcome to ask them at the beginning of class on Friday. We'll see you then.